Well, you guys are doing great hanging in here. Final day, final afternoon. Good job. And I have some good and bad news for you. Hopefully this will be entertaining. Some bad news is I'm probably going to go over 30 minutes. So if you get to the 30 minutes and you need to leave, please feel free to head out the door. Quite understand. This is... I'm just going to tell you a story about an IPM adventure that I've been in the last couple of years, and it involved a whole bunch of people, and I used resources and expertise from the IPM Institute of North America, Western IPM Center. I used some of their money, quite a lot of their money actually, a whole bunch of EPA money, which was fantastic, and the Arizona Pest Management Center had some resources and funds that we tapped into, and Arizona Cooperative Extension. And I was asked a question, Dawn, border IPM, do you mean IPM on the US-Mexico border, or do you mean border IPM? And that really was a good question, and really there's very little IPM in here at all. But that's not where we started. So the story is set in Nogales, in both Nogales, Sonora in Mexico, and Nogales, Arizona. And very easy goal, straightforward goal. Our goal was to develop an assessment tool and certification process to reward border schools and childcare facilities for implementing IPM. Pretty straightforward, huh? And we started, our first step was to assess the current school and childcare pest management practices, both north and south of the border, and prioritize the emerging needs. Sounds pretty straightforward. We never actually got past that first step. In 2 years. That really was where we began, and that's still where we're at. So off we went to Nogales Unified School District, which is actually on the north side of the border, and we went to visit the superintendent there, and he refused to give us permission to visit any of his schools once he found out why we were there and what we wanted to do. But luckily, we'd been to several already, and here's what we discovered. No monthly service contracts along these border schools. Very interesting. That they were basically on-site staff that were buying over-the-counter products and some agrochemical products as well and using them in the school system. There are two problems, and they really said that they really only had two problems, and that was mice and buzzards. And we encountered this in multiple schools in this one area. And we were like, buzzards? What? I'm not even sure what a buzzard is. But we pretty much found out what they were talking about. I believe this is a Cooper's hawk, so if anybody else knows better, please tell me. And apparently they would just like hang around the school grounds, and as soon as a pigeon or any kind of smaller bird arrived, they would just pounce on it and shred them. And apparently this was disturbing the teachers, traumatizing teachers, and entertaining the kids. And so a couple of the classrooms that overlooked the grassy areas, where they had paper in the windows to stop the kids watching the birds. And in fact, it really was a common occurrence. We saw red-tailed hawks in groups camped out on the ground, just stock still, and you wouldn't even know they were there until a pigeon flew in, and then all of a sudden there was feathers everywhere. And so we gave some programs and some information and demonstrated how to trap mice and exclude mice, and we described that seeing buzzards or whatever, raptors, shredding pigeons was actually quite a beautiful thing and to be encouraged at all costs. And so, full of confidence that we had all the answers, we went south of the border. And this is one of the first schools that we visited. It's right across the border, and in Nogales, Sonora. And we found that the schools didn't apply pesticides on site at all. And they really didn't have any kind of pest management program. And they didn't buy things over the counter either. But what they did do is they have these on-site stores. They don't have kitchen facilities and eating areas. They have privately owned stores that come into the school and they set up shop. And there is one of them right there. And they do buy over the counter what they call fumigants, but they're pesticides, and they do treat the stores. And they broadcast rodent cake is what it's referred to as. They just throw that throughout the entire store areas and school facilities. And this lady's trying to hide, but we took a photograph of her anyway. And you can see that they had refrigerators, coolers, little heating ovens, and storage facilities, and they kept things in plastic bins. And we were just delighted by this. And we were a little disturbed at the whole rodent cake thing. But apart from that, they didn't seem to be doing too bad. On the other side of this particular school, here's the other store. It's pretty unusual for schools to have two stores, but the stores are privately owned and their profits are divided between the school site and the owner of the store. So it's a win-win situation, and a lot of these kids, their main meal of the day is actually from these facilities. So you can see them, they've got hairnets, they've got aprons, they've got refrigerators, they containerize everything at the end of the day. Fantastic. All of these stores are actually inspected by health inspectors once or twice a year. So not so bad. Then we went to one of the poorer areas in Nogales, which is quite a scary place altogether. And we visited another school, and that's the school up there on the hill. And I don't know if you can see, can I point to, that's the actual main gate. And there's actually two people stood there. And they are monitoring people going in and out, and you have to give them a pretty good reason why you're there, and you have to go check in at the office. And there is a lot of drug dealing going on, and if the drug dealers can get access to the kids, then they will give them all manner of different things to get them into that. That's looking down from that where that gate is, and it's a pretty poor area. There's the inside of the school grounds. Pretty much every time we went about 11 times. The kids were outside playing all of the time. We never actually found them in a classroom. The sanitation was totally different from the previous school that we'd been to. And this is what the store looked like. They actually had a problem with scorpions falling into these little, these were full of candy, little sweets, and they would make sure, they would rummage through them first thing in the morning, make sure there wasn't scorpions in there. And they had had several envenomations with kids just putting their hands in and getting stung. They have no refrigeration, there's no coolers. They're actually cooking stuff on the back here. That there was a little hot plate. They have, their containers don't even have lids on them. And they had a huge mouse and rat problem. And that's the playing area. I don't know, this is an open gate. And this guy had just pulled a vehicle in and he's closing it. There's two ladies there and they stand there with a constant vigil whenever the kids are out in the playground, again, to prevent the drug dealers from coming down and interacting with the kids. When you talk to a principal of a school like that about pest management, she really gives you very little time because they have much more serious issues as a priority. We couldn't get many smiles out of these kids, unfortunately. That was about the biggest smile we got. The kids in all of these schools do their own cleaning, which mainly involves redistribution of the dirt around the floor with really, really filthy cleaning things, mops and brushes, and but they all do it themselves. This is a preschool, and these kids were as young as three, and this was one occasion when we went when the wind was not blowing. Usually this outdoor area was just like a dust storm, and so it was really kind of difficult to even breathe and see quite often when we visited. They had some really significant problems. They had bumper populations of bark scorpions, they had tons of mice, tons of pigeons, and tons of rats. And we actually saw rats running around during the day. And we never did go back of an evening, but I can only imagine. In Mexico reports annually about 1,000 fatalities due to scorpion envenomations, and that's really just the tip of the iceberg. In Arizona, we get about 7,000, between 7 and 8,000 envenomations reported each year. So you can imagine what in the whole of Sonora, Mexico, you could probably times that by 10 and you'd be closer to what's actually going on in Mexico. This is the kitchen of the preschool, and you can see probably pretty easily that you can't the roof doesn't actually fit, and the door didn't fit either, and the windows were broken, and this is colored paper that they do the best they can with. They do have refrigerators. They cover all the surfaces that they're going to work on with this paper to try to keep the rodent urine off work surfaces. There's pigeons infesting most of the roof areas of these classrooms. You can see the pigeon poop and the roof that doesn't fit and the rats after dark on this slide. So this isn't a very happy talk, is it really? It's not a very good place to finish, but it gets worse actually, it really does. So, but to sum up, no monthly treatment, self-administered fumigants, over-the-counter or agrochemical products are used, and it really doesn't matter whether it's a herbicide or a fungicide or a pesticide, they're all used, quite often mixed in buckets at the same time, whatever they can get hold of, and applied around the school. Stores are inspected, as I mentioned, by state health officials, and there's an army of ladies called promotoras who are the health advocates and the health educators that work in Mexico, and we really got a lot of help from them, and are continuing to work with them. Head lice was not a big problem on the border, and that's because they have their very own way of dealing with it. All you need is a tea towel, a can of Raid, and you spray down your tea towel until it's good and damp, and then you wrap it around your kid's head. And that's really good, apparently, for killing head lice. Yeah. So, you can only imagine. Okay, so we're truly demoralized and have no answers. At this point, we're thinking, oh my good gravy, what are we going to do? But we heard that the childcare facilities are absolutely fabulous, and so we thought, okay, well, we'll go visit a few of them and get a bit of a spiritual lift from that before we continue on. And the large corporate facilities for childcare in Mexico along the border are associated with the maquiladoras. The maquiladoras are US-owned factories. So automakers, Masterlark, a lot of pharmaceutical companies. There's 80 of them just in Nogales alone. And just in that one 300-mile long border that we have with Mexico. And why do they set up there? Well, the US factories set up across the border to take advantage of low wages in Mexico and the lax environmental regulations. In 2000, there were more than 4,000 maquiladoras south of the border along the whole US-Mexican border, about 100 in Nogales. And the numbers of maquiladoras is actually declining, not increasing, and we'll talk a bit about why that is later. Well, oh my goodness, I was so glad to see this. They have beautiful childcare facilities. They're pristine, they're the cleanest places ever. And they have a pest management program, and they have people who come through every 2 weeks. And I'm like, wow, okay, fantastic. I can't imagine why. The places were so clean. The kitchen facilities were wonderful, spotlessly clean, fabulous. And then we asked what they were using every 2 weeks, and we weren't so happy when we got some of this information. Bendiacarb. So Ficam is actually fabulous stuff for killing scorpions, but would you want to apply it in and around a childcare facility? Probably not. A bunch of various things, including some of the older rodent cake, the warfarin-based rodenticides. So I don't need to explain to you how carbamates work. You guys already know this information. But this, I felt very compelled that this was information that perhaps the childcare facilities needed to know. So, but we thought maybe, you know, we only visited five or six places initially, and we wanted to get a better resolution on, you know, was this typical? Was this being occurring in all of these 80 different facilities? So we sent out this questionnaire, and these are some of the things that are reported to being used regularly at childcare facilities in these maquiladoras. Bendiacarb is mixed with DDT because, you know, two is better than one, and they're all worried about malaria. The actual malaria risk along the border in that area is extremely low. And so this is probably just absolutely not a reason whatsoever. And residual activity for bendiacarb is about 6 months in indoor areas. And this is going out sometimes every 2 weeks. This is a happy family. They're happy because they're employed by the maquiladora. Their kids get the best schooling, their facilities possible. But unfortunately, these are some of the things that are actually being their kids are actually being exposed to. Dibromochloropropane, we couldn't quite figure out why they were using that, because it's actually a nematicidal fumigant that was banned in the US in the 1978, at the end of the 1970s. But it kept showing up as a product on these reports that we got back. And then more expectedly, as we expected, we'd see the endosulfan and some of those things that have also been banned in the US. So one of the first things we did was we got all excited and we went back and I gave a presentation to a group of maquiladoras. Their association is called APSA, and they had representatives from these 80 different facilities. And so we talked about IPM and alternatives, much safer alternatives to some of the pesticides that they were applying. And this was the very first question I got pretty much brought me to tears. They said, why is it that the US think US children are more beautiful than Mexican children? And I had no idea how to answer that. Because what they were very, very clear on was the fact that a lot of these pesticides were manufactured and came imported from the US and applied in facilities around Mexican children when they had already been deemed unfit to be applied around US kids. So I didn't really have much of an answer for that one, but I did try to encourage them to take action within their own state and within Mexico and try to change some of those policies. And I went on a letter writing campaign. I had this 3-page report of findings and solutions to problems, not just problems, but we have some of the answers for some of this. And I sent letters out to pretty much everybody. So City of Nogales, the Mexican EPA, SEMARNAT, the Ministry of Environment and Natural Resources, which is the federal Mexico, the KEDS, which is the Ecology and Sustainable Development Commission for the State of Sonora, so State of Sonora entity, and you can see everybody else, pretty much even the Ministry of Livestock, Agriculture, Hydrologic Resources, Fisheries, and Aquaculture. I thought they should get a copy as well. And here's what I got back from the State of Sonora folks. The Mexican regulatory authorities follow very much the very exhaustive US regulations. And for some reason, this response lodged in the part of my brain where I keep the Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, and the Easter Bunny. And so here is a pictorial representation of my verbal response to the State of Sonora. And that pretty much says it very accurately. I also got a response, very exciting response, from the federal group, SEMARNAT. And they were very excited and very stressed, but they really were quite incredulous and said, well, we need to see this for ourselves. And I was like, okay, no problem. I can take you there. We can make this happen. So we set up a date. 17 people confirmed that they would be there. And so one showed up. And this chap was a fabulous man, thank goodness, Dr. Salvador Ponce Serrano. And he he's the General Health School Coordinator for the state of Sonora. So he was the man, and we are continuing to work with him, developing educational materials in Spanish for use and by the promotores, workshops for the promotores, and also we put in several petitions for fast-tracking renovation of schools, the preschool in particular. And we did hear back that the preschool has been fast-tracked based on our findings and reports, and that they will be considered for renovation in 2 years. That's the fast track. So I left the Maquiladora meeting very disturbed and feeling very responsible for something that I desperately wanted to make the Mexican society responsible for taking action within Mexico for fixing this, to change the EPA laws, to change the laws in Mexico that would not, so that those terrible things couldn't be applied around kids. And but at the same time, it just didn't feel that that was ever really going to happen anytime soon. And so the next part of my talk is going to tell you a little bit about some of the other problems that closely related to this kind of situation in Sonora, Mexico. So the U.S. exports banned or unregistered pesticides to Mexico that are banned in the U.S. We know this. Pesticide exports are used on crops, which are then sent back to the U.S. It's, what goes around comes around, guys. Considerable evidence exists concerning the harmful effects of some of those banned products that are used on crops that are probably brought back in to the state, to the U.S., rather. Mexico is the second largest pesticide importer in Latin America. In 2007, the USDA reported the total value of monthly agricultural imports to the U.S. from Mexico. 15% came from Mexico. And so that's a lot that we're bringing back in. NAFTA has caused, I think, more problems as far as pesticide residues. One of the aims of NAFTA originally was to ensure that pesticides residues would not go over limits. Unfortunately, the opposite seems to have occurred. And talking to Mexican officials, they're now, they're like, oh, we don't need to worry about getting our pesticides from the U.S. anymore. We get most from China and Korea, and they're much cheaper and more effective, apparently. So free trade agreements have weakened pesticide regulation for sure. Higher economic value of export crops facilitates the increase in the use of pesticides. And this has been going on since a long time, as I'll demonstrate. New technologies can cause disastrous consequences when they're imported and injected into communities that do not have the infrastructure needed to support them. And this is not my story. This is a story that dates back several decades. And probably people have heard of the Yaqui Indian story. You guys lots of people. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about how that happened. The Green Revolution started in 1943 with the opening of the Office of Special Studies in the U.S. And this was led by an agronomist, Norman Borlaug. And it was an effort that was initiated. The Mexican government requested help increasing their wheat yields. They were importing half of their wheat from other countries, and they decided they wanted to be self-sufficient in wheat. And so they requested help, and the Rockefeller Foundation and the administration in Mexico decided that they would initiate this Green Revolution in the 1940s. And Norman actually got the Nobel Peace Prize for his work fighting world hunger in 1970. Unfortunately, had some disastrous consequences. But the venture spread existing technologies, so pesticide use, irrigation projects, synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, and several really successful plant breeding programs, and it took those technologies down to this Yaqui Valley area in Sonora, Mexico. And the Yaqui are an indigenous group living in this valley and upper mountain foothill area, and they received huge amounts of pesticides for use in this ag-intensive valley area, whereas the foothill area was just left because it wasn't good ag land. So the Yaqui are distributed between the foothills and the valley, and the valley Indians were suddenly exposed to very high levels of pesticides. And in 1998, we've all seen these drawings, I'm sure, there was a very disturbing report showing the differences in development in foothills versus valley children. So the valley kids are exposed to high levels of pesticides, whereas the foothills kids are just are not exposed to agriculture. And again, these are just drawings done comparing the two different groups of five-year-olds in this particular case. So you would think that shock and something dramatic would happen because of this. And now I'm going to tell you what's actually happening in that area today. So the valley children all those years ago showed massive loss of neurological integration, essential for learning and development. Both groups of children were Yaqui Indians. They had the same genetic background. They had the same dietary and cultural habits. The only obvious difference was that one group has been exposed to pesticides since the 1940s. So now we're going to go forward in time to when I've been visiting Mexico. And this is pictures from the summer of 2006 and 2007. And pretty much nothing has changed in the Yaqui Valley. The high pesticide intensive applications are still continuing. In 2006, there were 4 months when they had no potable water supply whatsoever. So they took their water source where the irrigation canals, as you can see. And these are pesticide drums that are being used to transport water, clothes for washing, everything else. And you can see the chaps in the field they have no gloves and, well. So the community has no municipal infrastructure. Water contamination is a huge problem. They take their spray equipment home. That is a typical home right there. And the guys will come in and they'll leave their spray gear on the floor in a corner of the home. There's aerial applications of pesticides. There's runoff issues and there's container issues. When the containers are empty, they're just thrown in the canals. And so this brings us back to what everybody in this room dearly loves and lives by, the precautionary principle. When risk of serious harm is evident, all available alternatives should be considered first. And the United Nations has a Universal Declaration of Human Rights that has called for the adoption of the precautionary principle to prevent harm to ecosystems and the public health. And at this point, you can see that we've left IPM way behind, and we're now into this is a human rights issue. And this is a principle that the US, now that I am a US citizen, we should adopt the same. So this, Freud believed, to wrap up, that people are motivated by sexuality or aggression. And then we have Pavlov, who believed in classical conditioning, formal learning through association. If good things happen because you do a certain thing, you're going to do that again. But this is the guy that really does it for me. Maslow developed this hierarchy of needs, and these needs are what motivate human beings to behave in a certain way. And when we have a technology that can be successfully used, if people are motivated by this top point of the pyramid, that's fabulous. But when we take a technology and we integrate it into a community that is driven by the bottom of the pyramid, absolutely disastrous things happen. So nobody got IPM certified in Mexico. And I'm a firm believer that every child has the right to realize their highest potential. And we all need to see how we personally can make that happen in Mexico as well as the US. Thank you.